Good evening, everybody. We are continuing our thought from this morning, the idea of self-care. We talked a little bit about why we should consider ourselves worthy of love from God, and thus we are worthy in a sense of trying to have value in our own lives, but our own selves. If you have a self-esteem issue, that may be helpful for you to kind of think about. And then also this morning, talking about self-care. Very simple concept, but one that goes back to ancient days. I tried to make that point very clear. The idea of taking care of yourself is a very important thing. We can't be expected to do everything all the time for everyone, and nor should we. And so when it comes to the idea of caring for ourselves because we are worthy, because we are loved, we have Jesus as an example to do that. So he took care of himself before big events and after big events. The same thing should be true of us in some way, that we have something that we can do that hopefully involves prayer, like Christ had, that will kind of recenter us, refocus us, and energize us, allowing us to deal with things that are difficult either before or after we have that time of self-care. Now, tonight, what I want to do is go to a text in which we have studied this particular text before, but I want to examine it in light of that conversation of self-care. It's one of my favorite passages. The very first time I found this, it helped me better understand myself a little bit better, and it gave me some insight into the heart of God and his compassion. We're going to be in 1 Kings chapter 19. This is the account in which we find the great prophet Elijah succumbing to human temptation, human weakness, and facing his own depression, we would say. Now, keeping in context here, what we find before chapter 19 is the great prophet Elijah had a very taxing event. This taxing, stressful event was a showdown between King Ahab and himself. Really, it was God through Elijah. And what happened was you had the prophets of Baal, which were completely supported by King Ahab of Israel and his wife Jezebel, whose name will go down in infamy, right? And so we had a showdown between this prophet, who is essentially homeless, we would say. He's not the king of Israel by any stretch of any imagination. And he confronts the king and says, look, there's been a drought on the earth for these years. We're going to have a showdown on Mount Carmel, and we're going to see whose God shows up. And so during that event, you have Elijah with his altar. You have the prophets of Baal with their altar. The prophets of Baal go first, and they cry out to Baal to come and take up the offering on the altar. No matter what they do all day, Baal didn't show up. They even cut themselves and hurt themselves trying by their blood sacrifice to get God Baal to pay attention to them. It did not work. And then you have Elijah going up there and pouring water all over the altar and the meat that was there, and a trench all the way around. So it was not easy to light, is the idea. Elijah said one prayer to God the Father, and God rained down heaven, or fire from heaven, and consumed the altar. They then killed all the prophets of Baal that were there. So to say that was somewhat stressful of a day for him is a very, very understated statement to make. So you would think, though, after a victory like that, being the instrument that God used to identify himself among Israel again, that nothing would really get to Elijah for a while. But that's the exact opposite of what we find here in the text. And that's why it's so fascinating to me that he had this high. He had this riding high moment in which he was victorious through God's power. He was seen to be a true prophet. God was in Israel again. King Ahab was kind of condemned. So was Jezebel. So were the prophets of Baal. God was the victor. And yet, we have this take place in chapter 19, verse 1 of 1 Kings. Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. And then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah, saying, may the gods do to me and more also if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by this time tomorrow. And we would say If we were in that situation in his sandals and we got that note from the queen, well, I just showed up all the prophets of Baal. I just showed up the king of Israel. You go ahead and make your threats. You can't touch me, would be a hopeful response. That's not what Elijah does at all. And the fact that it's recorded here in such a vulnerable way to show us the humanity of Elijah is powerful for this ancient document. Verse 3, then he was afraid. He just showed down with all the prophets of Baal and the king of Israel, and we see no fear. But now he's afraid of the queen. He rose, ran for his life, and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and he left his servant there. I think that's pretty telling for us. He's in a situation now where there's some kind of distress going on, obviously. He fears for his life. He runs down south to Beersheba, and he leaves a companion, a servant, behind, and he goes off by himself. Now, Jesus sometimes went away from the people, the multitudes, and he went off by himself to a mountainside to pray. But when he was in the most dire of situations, this morning we talked about Matthew 26, in which he was going to be betrayed by Judas. He went out to the garden, but he took his three best friends with him, Peter, James, and John. So he had that companionship of the people that were there to support him and lift him up in a physical sense. They were there. Elijah is now going off by himself, not to gain strength, but because he's afraid. And so this is not him leaving the multitudes to try to recenter himself and get more strength. This is him running and wanting to be alone in isolation. There's a huge difference, I'm sure you can tell, between going off by yourself in solitude, communing with God, and getting your strength back to go back in there and do what you have to do. That's scenario A from this morning of self-care. This is not that. This is, I am going to put a wall around myself and isolate myself and have an echo chamber of just my thoughts and my fears to deal with. That's not healthy, obviously. Let's keep reading. Verse 4. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he asked that he might die, saying, it is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am no better than my fathers. Talk about a loaded statement. Let's break that down. He's now gone a day into the wilderness, off by himself in isolation. He is now exhausted and he collapses beneath a tree. And then he's praying to die. Well, logically, if we approach this situation, I've said before in this text, if he really wanted to die, all he had to do is go see Jezebel, and that wish would be fulfilled. And so you might think, maybe he's not really asking to die here. Maybe he's asking for help, right? We sometimes talk about people, especially younger people, who are going through a difficult emotional time, and they may talk about the idea of suicide, or they may even try and attempt suicide. And sometimes we kind of say in response to that, maybe they're trying to cry for help. That's kind of what I see here in this text. It's Elijah has these emotions going. He's now off by himself a full day's journey. He's thinking that he has no friends, if you will, when it comes to the king at least. And so he's saying, Lord, take my life. And then he says, for I am no better than my fathers? Well, I'm so glad I've never had that thought cross my brain. I'm not better than anyone else that came before me. Well, Elijah, this is not about you. This is not just you in this situation. This is about God working through you. Did you forget that fact? Yes, he forgot that fact. And he's feeling all of it right now. Verse 5, and he lay down and slept under a broom tree. And this is where I really see so much insight into the compassion of God. Remember that angels, that word angel just simply means messenger in the Hebrew, the Aramaic, and the Greek. So it's kind of consistent in that way. When you see an angel or a messenger sent, they're sent from heaven, right? And so, behold, an angel touched him and said to him, "Arise and eat." So you might say that God sent a special messenger just to tell this guy, okay, get up, have some food. Verse 6, and he looked, and behold, there was at his head a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. And he ate and he drank and he lay down again. Well, good. Step one accomplished. Maybe he was just so out of it from the experience that he went through that he just needed some calories, he needed some hydration, he needed a nap. There's a meme going around right now, a funny little joke that says, don't forget that there is a guy in the Bible who was having a bad day, and God told him to have a snack and have a nap, and everything was okay. And being the father of a two-year-old, sometimes the world is just wrong, and it's so hard, and everything is just awful, but then you have a snack, and you have some water, and you have a nap, and everything's okay again. So that was attempt number one. If we find ourselves in a situation like this where we start to despair, maybe having a snack and having a nap is the first step of trying to fix that problem. Okay, verse 7, and the angel of the Lord came again a second time and touched him and said, arise and eat. And then this next part, for the journey is too great for you. Wow. God understands life is tough. Not only because of the fact that Jesus Christ lived a human life and experienced all the problems that we've ever had, yet without sin, right? All the temptations that are common to man. God knows that sometimes life's just tough. Life is just hard. And so he's saying here, here's a second meal. I know you're going down a hard road right now, in an emotional sense at the very least. Keep eating. He rose and he ate and he drank and he went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights. Look at where he ended up. To Oreb, the Mount of God. For those that were in Bible Bowl, you know that mountain very well. That's where God was. And so now he's in this particular situation. He's going through a very difficult emotional time. We can see quite easily how he has not used the tool of self-care, we've called it this morning, to try to address his emotional needs, to try to recenter, refocus, get strength. Instead, he isolated himself and made it worse and said he wanted to die, because he's no better than his fathers. And so we see the complete opposite of using self-care like Jesus did. We see the neglection of it when he needed it the most. Let's keep reading. He went to Oreb, the mountain of God. And so you might say, okay, we're getting closer to what Jesus did. He goes to a mountainside. He's going to climb that mountain, get as close as he can to God, which is, by the way, the word picture of climbing the mountain. That's getting closer to God, right? You commune with him through prayer. You get strength from that. You come down the mountain victorious. That's what Jesus would have done. We see four times in the text this morning. Verse 9. There he came to a cave. Okay. You go to a mountainside, and you go deeper into a dark, more isolated pit of this mountainside. Not exactly the climb up and commune with God recipe we talked about this morning. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, and he said, what are you doing here, Elijah? I gave you food, you had a nap, you had a second meal, you got your strength back, you isolated yourself again. What are you doing here? He said, I have been very jealous or zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, killed your prophets with the sword, and I only am left, and they seek to seek my life to take it away. So what's his problem? You might say, if you want to be a little unkind, he's having a pity party. He's saying, I'm the only one who's serving you faithfully. That's not true, but that's how he felt. And therefore, in a sense, it is true. He says, I feel alone. I feel like I'm the only one here doing it. I want to go out there and just find enemy after enemy after enemy. I feel like I'm the only one. I'm so glad that thought has never crossed my brain. Verse 11, he said, go and stand on the mount before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, there was an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. Okay, talk about a prophet receiving a prophetic vision. This is that. The Lord showing him something through a visual image that's supposed to evoke a certain emotional response from him. If we think about what that would have looked like, you have the great wind, you have the earthquake, you have the fire. These are all loud, obvious, and powerful things. And it said, the Lord was not in the loud, powerful, obvious things. Let's keep reading. And after the fire, verse 12, part B, the sound of a low whisper. Now, get that contrast. You've got three strong, loud things. God's not in that. And you have a still, small voice. Keep reading. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak. He went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And behold, there came a voice to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? This is how I imagine it. He was down in the cave. God says, what are you doing down here? He says, I'm throwing a pity party for myself. I'm the only one. God says, okay, come up here. So he goes up there. God shows him that vision. I'm not in the loud, powerful, obvious things. My power, Elijah, is in the one still, small voice, whom you are, the one guy who will speak truth. And then he wraps himself up and he's headed right back down there into that cave. What are you doing here, Elijah? He said, I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. For the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword, and I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away. Has there been much growth from that revelation? Not yet. But the Lord's still patient with him. He's not getting the lesson yet, but he's still working with him through the lesson. Now look at this in verse 15. The Lord said to him, go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael to be king over Syria. So, you have a job to do, Elijah. You can't go to a cave right now. You can't be alone right now. You need to go and do my work. Part 2, verse 16. And Jehu, the son of Nimshi, you shall anoint to be king over Israel. And Elisha, the son of Shaphat of Abel-Meholah, you shall anoint to be prophet in your place. He says, no, you can't go back into that cave. You have to go anoint two kings, and you need to find a friend. You need to find Elisha, who's going to take your place when you're not here anymore. If you feel like you're the only one left, you go and make more. Now, we know the dichotomy between Elijah and Elisha. Elisha immediately becomes the new Elijah. Elijah's taken up to heaven in a whirlwind. They go looking for him, but Elisha knows he's not there. He's in heaven. He takes up his mantle, his belt, and he continues to do the work of a prophet in Israel. But if Elijah didn't go through this, he wouldn't have been sent to get Elisha. So how much good came out of a negative situation here in this text? A lot. verse 19. Well, let's keep reading verse 17. And the one who escapes the sword of Hazael shall Jehu put to death, and the one who escapes from the sword of Jehu shall Elisha put to death. So there's going to be a continuation of successions going on here. And then a little bit of information that hopefully made him feel a little bit better. Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. You think you're the only one? The Lord knows those that belong to him. He departed there. He found Elisha, the son of Shaphat, who was plowing the 12 yoke of oxen in front of him. Obviously, it's 12 because of the 12 tribes of Israel. I say tongue in cheek because we don't know why it's 12, but it sounds like a good answer. So there you go. And he was with the 12. Elijah passed by him, cast his cloak upon him, just threw his jacket on and said, "All right, let's go." He left the oxen. He ran after Elijah and said, "Let me kiss my father and mother, and then I will follow you." He said to him, "Go back again, for what do I have to do with you? Good, take care of your business. Let's go." He returned from following him, took the yoke of oxen, sacrificed them, boiled their flesh with the yoke of the oxen, and gave it to the people, and they ate. And they arose, and he went after Elijah and assisted him. The Lord was so patient with this man who had won this great victory over the prophets of Baal. He gave him time, he gave him patience, he gave him information, he gave him encouragement to allow him to care for himself that he could take care of God's business. When I see this text, it encourages me so much that God knows that life is tough. So when life gets tough for you, don't forget, God knows life gets tough. Take care of yourself so that you can take care of the work of the Lord. This evening, if someone has a need to respond, if we can encourage you, if we can lift you up, if we can pray for you, if we can do anything for you tonight, please respond by coming forward now as we stand and we sing.